Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Between the Ropes podcast. This is our Best of 2017 Day 2. That's right. I said Day 2. If you did not hear yesterday, please go back and check that podcast out first, because we are about to spoil the results of those six categories here in just a few minutes. I am Michael Wiseman, here with my cohort, my co-host, my friend, my muse. He still can't believe it's not butter. Brian Fritz, everybody. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing okay.
That's an introduction for you, huh?
I like that, you know, especially the butter part.
Right. Well, you like your country crock of fresh vegetable oil spread, right?
I'm not eating that stuff you people eat up in the Carolinas.
And the always with the Carolinas. God. We're also lucky enough today to be joined by another good friend of ours. Great, great, funny guy. Writes for EGN. There you go, EGN.
That works.
IGN writer. You probably know him from the wrestling wrap up, but also some people don't realize this. Matt is also a member of the Television Critics Association. That's right. The Matt Fowler on Twitter, IGN specialist, and a guy that honestly, Matt, I'm going to say this on the air. I've been a big fan of your work for many years, and it's awesome to know you now, but just a funny, funny guy. How you doing, Matt?
I'm great. Thank you, Michael. You are a sweet summer child. I appreciate all the kind words.
Can I make that like my new little on LinkedIn, you know, ask you what your description is? Can I put sweet summer child up there?
You can do whatever you'd like, because it's your life and you're the one who's going to have to be on a deathbed someday with regrets.
Empowerment.
By the way, Matt, this is the first time that we've ever talked where we haven't been able to hold each other, you know, in a warm embrace.
Oh, I know.
It feels weird.
This is how a prime example of how technology works to separate us from our physical forms. Yeah, it is. I do miss your warm, tender, sort of enrapturing embrace. And usually it's prompted by Michael. He's the one who wants us to touch all the time. But I'm fine with it.
I do have to take credit for this. The world's greatest hug was coordinated. What was it? SummerSlam weekend, right?
Yeah.
I was not there, unfortunately. I was at a wedding. But Brian and Matt, it was your birthday, Matt, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it's worked out that it's usually my birthday a couple days before. Now, this time it worked out. It was actually at NXT before SummerSlam.
Yeah. That's a pretty good birthday present. And I just remember constantly tweeting it or texting Brian to go and hug Matt when he saw him, to give him a birthday hug. And it was a glorious moment, from what I understand.
The funny thing was, is that I didn't realize until like a couple minutes before the show that Matt was like two rows behind me. And of course, that prompted that great hug in front of many other people as we held each other for probably an extra 10 seconds. And some people are like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Then, and they don't even do this at the wrestling shows, but they activated the kiss cam and the entire arena came to a stop. I know people talk about Asuka and Ember Moon during that card, but I think we were the show stealers.
I do too. And you know, and I got sick of all these people talking about how Bailey is such a great hugger that we just had to top her.
You know, did they offer you guys a spot on the next season of Total Divas? That's what I want to know. Or Total Bellas, right? You can have your own spinoff show.
The Bellas? Yeah, okay. I mean, I was thinking that our friendship could rival that of Nia and Alexa, but if you want us to go over to the sort of the offshoot, yeah.
Well, Matt, as you know, Michael and I are prudes. We wouldn't accept being just on Total Divas. So when they asked us if we wanted to be on Total Bellas, we said yes, but only if it was a feature role. And that's exactly what we got.
It's kind of like when, I don't know if either of you also showed up in the episode of Total Divas back, I think it was first season. What, you know, when they had the press conference down at the Performance Center, all those years ago, you could see a lot of us in the crowd there as they struck the bell and did I forget what they were actually announcing, but we all got a tour of the Performance Center, which was pretty impressive.
I might have made a cameo there. You might have seen me walking around with maybe the governor of Florida.
Oh yeah, there you go.
We're just like regular E-channel, E-network superstars on this podcast.
We are recurring characters with promise of becoming series regulars. Yes.
I was going to say, I'm holding off my SAG card because I really want that insurance.
Yeah.
I just want to live next door to the Miz. So, you know, it's all good either way. So, all right, let me get back here.
You'd have to move out of the Carolinas. I was saying you'd have to move out of the Carolinas.
I you were going to do this thing to me too that Brian Fritz does to me every week. And I have to clarify, I live in North Carolina. I do not live in the Carolinas. Those backwoods Southerners in South Carolina are a very different breed of people than us classy North Carolinians here in North Carolina.
So which state has the spicier ketchup? I mean, I don't know what the little idiosyncrasies are, but...
Spicier ketchup. We have the good barbecue. We have a very diverse population. We have just a much more beautiful landscape. Boone is in North Carolina, not South Carolina. I could go on for days.
I will say I went to South Carolina for the first time in my life last year during a set visit, and it was... not fun, and someone threw a bottle at me. So I will stand by your distinction between the two states for now, because I only have one state to go by.
Well, and that sets the bar pretty low, I guess, but you know, we can jump over that broom. All right, let's recap day one. So Matt, I know you weren't with us here yesterday, but I just want to kind of run down the categories we went through. We had Spencer Davies with us, and we kind of came to some pretty interesting conclusions. So we kicked it off with Feud of the Year, and we said Okada versus Omega was kind of our pick. We gave a couple of shout outs here. I was partial to the Miz and Maurice versus John Cena and Nikki Bella in the WrestleMania feud. But what feuds, what would you say your Feud of the Year for 2017 was, just on the top of your head?
I mean, it hasn't been a long lasting feud, but they've had three matches where, you know, the Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne series I've really enjoyed. As crazy as it was in their attempt to sort of top each other with violence each week, you know, Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, as far as like a Raw feud goes, it really was therapeutic for me after his match with Roman's match with Undertaker at WrestleMania, because it was just sort of nonstop Roman getting his ass handed to him. And then attempted murder. and because you can't go wrong with that. And then I really liked, as brief as it was, because I got really excited when Joe got his Great Balls of Fire match with Brock Lesnar. I really enjoyed that one too.
That was an explosive, one of those tiny kind of brief moment, but really good feuds for what it was. And I think the payoff was people wanted Joe to win. But I think it was a fun all around 1 month long feud that could have gone longer. But you look back on it now and say, well, yeah, but that's a little slice of perfection for what it was.
And he got to remain in the title picture through SummerSlam, you know,
right.
Joe. So exactly. It wasn't exactly the same feud, but yeah, he got to stay up there for a little while.
We did name Andrade Cien Almas our breakout star of the year, with a nod to Aleister Black in second and Pete Dunne in third. Who really stood out to you this year for your breakout star or rookie of the year, or however you want to kind of couch that?
I mean, I would agree with Almas. I thought that was it's one of those things where if you are able to get a bodyguard or a valet or something, you can really get that push. And I think Zelina's really helped him, rise through the ranks. It's one of the reasons over the years why I've wanted Bray Wyatt to have a sister Abigail, like a physical sister Abigail, because that for me would be a big reason why he could get a push that a lot of us have always sort of wanted for that character. I've been really enjoying Elias because they've been taking their time with him. He could have easily flopped and floundered on the main roster.
Yeah, I think Elias is a really good example of that guy that we were surprised to see break out on the main roster the way he did without kind of spiking at NXT at all.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good point, because people like the Vaudevillains and Bo Dallas, you know, Bo Dallas, who is actually even NXT champ, their success down in NXT did not translate at all to the main roster. They had a certain shtick that just didn't resonate in a serious manner. They could only be niche performers on the main roster.
Right.
And Elias was almost like that. But they kind of doinked him. They set him up so he was just in the background for weeks.
They doinked him.
he didn't wrestle for a while, and he's got a gimmick that doesn't rely on wrestling matches.
Right.
He could appear on Raw each week and do a segment that has nothing to do with the match.
Yeah.
And so they can really take their time with him. And I really enjoyed him.
I think too, he doesn't get enough rub. He is a decent in-ring performer. I don't think we've seen enough of him to say he's a great wrestler yet, but for what he does it pretty entertainingly as well. You mentioned the Vaudevillains, and so you're already setting up my segues for me. We did Tag Team of the Year. We did not nominate the Vaudevillains at all. Third place, we put the Young Bucks. Second place, we said the Usos, who are just workhorses year in, year out. And number one, we set the bar there with Sheamus and Cesaro. Who did you pick for Tag Team of the Year?
It would be the Bar. I really enjoyed that pairing. And, Cesaro getting his teeth knocked up into his face. And the beach ball squash. All
yeah.
in the same...
Oh, yeah, the beach ball moment.
But, I just... You know, back when Wade Barrett was on the roster and you would get these matches where it would be Sheamus and Wade Barrett and Cesaro and like, oh, this is going to be a really hard hitting, you know, European style match. And we'd all get really excited. That's kind of what you get with this pairing. You get these big bruisers who, unfortunately, in the feud they had with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, Cesaro was the only one of the four who wasn't world champion at some point. And I don't know that he ever will be. But this is really, this is kind of a prime spot for him with Sheamus. I think they really found something. I was really resentful of the forced feud they had going, the best of series they had last year that didn't have any resolution at all. And then getting put into that uneasy alliance tag team, I was not excited about that. But then once they decided that they were going to do it and they did like each other and they did connect, on certain levels, and they just became this really brutal, you know, top tier tag team. I was a huge fan of it.
Sure. Yeah, it's really worked out, and I'm glad that even both men, Sheamus, who has been a former world champion, and Cesaro, are both getting a different kind of rub from this pairing. Most memorable moment, I won't run down our entire list, but I will say, number two, we were all really surprised by Chris Jericho challenging Kenny Omega for Wrestle Kingdom 12, and I think that was a great kind of cultural moment for wrestling. And number one, Brian and I were just adamant. The Hardy Boys returning at WrestleMania was such a special moment. It had such a great energy in Camping World Stadium and outside of it. That was our most memorable moment of the year. What stood out to you as far as one of those big surprises this year that you just think back to in 2017?
I mean, because a lot of the ones that were the most memorable to me were the ones that weren't planned. You know, like the Hardys coming back.
Right.
Planned. I don't know if we expected the pop they got, but it was really memorable, like you said. But, you know, the Mumps taking out a huge part of the card at TLC and Kurt Angle returning. That was very memorable. The Miz on Talking Smack, when he sort of let loose on all of his haters, and it was sort of channeled at Daniel Bryan, but these were sort of off the cuff moments that really sort of stood out to me.
Yeah, I think that Miz call, it's a great one because also, again, partial Miz fan. I mean, partial to the Miz here as a Miz fan, but it really shed a different dimension of his character and I think cemented him as one of the top, if not the top, talkers in the company. Damaged Angle of the Year. This is my favorite award. It's the award that says, man, what did the wrestling world really screw up this year? And we talked a lot about This Is Your Life. We talked about the Jinder Mahal, Shinsuke Nakamura, a racism segment. But we really did center on the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt feud just for the lackluster matches they had and what was supposed to be a pretty promising battle, and the great setup, the way it culminated at WrestleMania and the House of Horrors match, and even afterwards, was just so disappointing. It earned our Damaged Angle of the Year. What were you really disappointed by this year, Matt?
I guess part of it has to do with Bray Wyatt, and I've always been a huge fan of his, and it's also. You could talk about Dolph Ziggler too in this regard because he's won so many titles and yet he's somebody that we consider hasn't lived up to their quote unquote potential. But, you know, back in the day, all these people we remember from the 80s, from the WWF back in the day that are considered legends, never won titles, never got, you know, Royal Rumble wins or King of the Ring wins or anything like that. They just existed on the mid card and had feuds that I can't even remember who came out on top of, you know, people like Jake the Snake and Rick Rude and these people we consider legends. Dolph Ziggler is so decorated compared to those guys. And he is, you know, his gimmick has now become, you know, you don't appreciate me for what I've done, just for what I haven't done. And that's been Bray Wyatt has kind of like that too, except he was WWE champ this year.
Right.
And yet we still focus on all the ways that his gimmick and his things don't work. So I would pair that up with his Finn Balor feud this year, which I guess would be my biggest misstep, because Finn Balor, we've now seen WWE use his demon persona twice in the main roster, right? Twice?
Yeah. Three times maybe, I think.
But in moments that didn't call for the persona at all.
Right.
And the pay-per-view dictated the persona, not the feud. So they rushed him into a demon match with Bray for SummerSlam because it was SummerSlam. And they rushed him, and he stayed the demon for his match with AJ Styles because Bray got taken out by Mumps because it was advertised.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be the demon. In fact, by that point, if he had had his match with Bray Wyatt as planned, his demon character was supposed to be even a more powerful demon than his demon. He was supposed to have been a pumpkin spice demon of some sort that could top his previous demon appearance. So that was the biggest misstep for me.
Well, and you mentioned earlier, I talked about pairing a manager with Andrade Cien Almas and what it's done for him and the potential of putting a Sister Abigail with Bray Wyatt. But Matt, we've already seen Sister Abigail. She was on the Titantron back in October in a very creepy segment, if you'll remember.
Oh, yeah. And when Bray Wyatt sounded like Cookie Puss, Cookie Puss is your old man Generation X reference for today. I don't know if he still exists out there. But yeah, we have seen it. And now that Bray is actually in a feud with Woken Matt Hardy, I think they can actually do that and it would and it would work, because it would just pair up with what Woken Matt is doing. So bring back Bray as Sister Abigail for this feud, and then do it up really, you know, goofy as hell.
We talked this week on the show a little bit on our weekly show about the potential of, I mentioned, man, if we still had Stardust around to feud with Broken or Woken Matt Hardy in WWE, how great would that be? The promos they could cut on one another would just be fantastic. But yeah, if you take and pair Bray Wyatt into that as well, a triple threat match, and then you get Finn in there, that would just be a fun all-around feud. Last category we did yesterday before we come on to today is pay-per-view or show of the year. And we did a top five ranking here. So in from five to one, number five, the only WWE pay-per-view to make the list, Royal Rumble. Four, we did the UK tournament. Three, we actually did Wrestle Kingdom 11. Two, NXT War Games. And number one, Brian really dug in his heels here, but I think he convinced us, New Japan Pro Wrestling Dominion was our pay-per-view show of the year. Thoughts on that list? Anything you'd add to it?
I don't know that I'd add anything to it. I mean, I'm not the most avid New Japan watcher, to my shame. I just don't have the time. So, but of this past year, I did watch the two, you know, whatever, Meltzer shattering rating scales, Kenny Omega Okada matches that were amazing. I'm just still not really familiar with that promotion. But I did watch it back in the early 90s, if that counts. But.
So what's your early 90s Wrestle Kingdom or New Japan Pro Wrestling pay-per-view of the year? How about that?
You know, like a lot of Masa Chono and a lot of Jushin Liger. And,
there you go.
But yeah, I guess I would say Royal Rumble.
It was. It was the WWE standout last year, I felt like, or this past year.
And I enjoyed NXT Brooklyn 3 and War Games as well.
I think it's interesting that WWE on our list just came in right at the tail end of that, but NXT brings it every time they put out a pay-per-view, it really does feel like.
Well, you know, when they do those right before the big four pay-per-views for WWE, it's always the same coming out of the show. How is WWE going to top this?
Right.
It's the same messaging after every NXT takeover.
So we have four great categories today. Brand of the year, biggest news story of the year, wrestler of the year, and of course, match of the year. But before we get into that, I just want to say, hey guys, thanks for listening. If you like what we do, please subscribe if you haven't already. Take a minute, if you don't mind, go on iTunes, give us a quick rating, review us, give us a shout out on social media. We are on Twitter, we're at Between the Ropes. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/Between the Ropes. I am on Twitter, Michael A. Wiseman, at The Real Wiseman. Brian Fritz is at Brian Fritz, and Matt Fowler is at The Matt Fowler if you want to follow with us. So again, thanks for listening to today, and let's jump on in here. brand of the year. And we had a little bit of discussion around what does brand of the year mean? And it really is one of those things where WWE is in a unique spot here because they have multiple brands under the same umbrella. So for this category, we kind of consider SmackDown, Raw, NXT, 205 Live, all as separate brands. New Japan Pro Wrestling obviously would be a brand, organization, company, Ring of Honor, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, whoever you want to consider in here, we can have that discussion. But Brian, when you saw this list for brand of the year, what came to your mind?
I thought this is a no-brainer. To me, it's New Japan Pro Wrestling, because if you look at the level of wrestling that they had this year, and like Matt said, you know, those two matches that start off the year, or the first two matches between Omega and Okada, and then they had the third match, and just the overall year that they had in that promotion. And even if you don't even talk about those three matches in particular, everything else that they did, from Wrestle Kingdom, other big matches they had in Dominion, the G1 climax that they had, and just the incredible amount of talent that they have in that promotion. It's arguably the best year of wrestling that New Japan has ever had. It's one of the best years of in-ring wrestling that we've had, you know, probably over the last, you know, I don't know how many years, but it's been a long time since we've seen a promotion like this exceptional when it comes to what they do in the ring. And I think that says something for what we look at for anything outside of WWE, just because they do more when it comes to, you know, storytelling and storylines and angles and whatnot. New Japan does that. Other promotions do it, but they're not as heavy on it. And when you look at, you know, in-ring action around the world, 2017 in particular really stands out for just incredible wrestling everywhere. And I think New Japan sits at the top of that list. I would put NXT number two, because once again, like you guys said, I mean, when it comes to these takeover shows, I mean, those guys just bring it. I mean, how many times have we talked about like, you know, I don't know how good this takeover is going to be. Maybe they're finally going to take a step down on this one. It doesn't look as exciting going into it. And then you get done watching and you're like, damn, that was another incredible show. So those would be my top two when it comes to the brand of the year.
You talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I'm going to jump in here and say that was right at the top of my list. And for the great matches, but I don't want to just simplify it to, you talked about the global impact here. They had some great cards. We had some great matches and these incredible feuds that were very different from what WWE audiences are accustomed to. But what New Japan Pro Wrestling was able to do as far as making an impact on the American wrestling audience in 2017, to me, says wonders about where their brand is. Because a year ago, we weren't talking about them. I think last year we did this category, SmackDown was our brand of the year, and rightfully so. SmackDown had a breakout year with a lot of great talent. But we keep talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling and what is their potential for growth in 2018 and 2019. And it does feel like, you know, you and I have been talking about this for a number of years, Brian, that who is going to be the brand, the company, the talent to stand up and challenge the WWE dominance. We thought it was going to be Impact for a number of years. And then we said maybe Ring of Honor, but they just don't have the resources. And it seems like New Japan Pro Wrestling is starting to carve out an American audience in a pretty profound way, to the point where we get this amazing Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega match at Wrestle Kingdom 12 in January, in just a couple of weeks. So I think New Japan Pro Wrestling jumps off the chart here just because of the impact they had. And great wrestling in WWE this year, but nothing about Raw, SmackDown really stood out to me as being like, man, they had this amazing card, or they had these incredible feuds that we'll remember for years and years and years. New Japan is right there at the top of my list. Matt, I know you said you're not a huge New Japan Pro Wrestling fan. You just don't have the time for it. So let me ask you, what's your brand of the year?
So I want to ask a question at first. Did we really ever think Impact was going to give WWE for its money? Like, was that something that was actually a possibility at one time or another?
You know what? I'll say a run for their money might be a little bit strong, but there was a period there in like 2003, 2004, they had come down to Orlando and they were regularly doing their tapings, and they were starting to do some numbers on Spike. With what they were doing, like, you know, and remember, there was a part there where they were regularly doing over a million people, viewers a week. They, you know, sometimes it would get to as high as 1.5 million, and they were carving out a nice niche before they decided to go the route that so many have tried to do before and overspend on past stars and not create new stars and whatnot. And there was an area there where I wouldn't say necessarily like really compete, but be a strong number two. And that quickly went away, and they've never been able to come anywhere close to that.
So when you say like 2003 or so, like, so right when the WWE, when, right when WWE sort of absorbed their main competition and had, after they had the invasion angle and they really were just the only player in town. So that was the perfect moment. Is your kind of what you're saying?
I think so, because you look at that period between, what was it, like 2003, 2005, somewhere around there. Maybe even 2006. If you go during that stretch, I mean, they were getting some traction on Spike TV. They got that television deal, which was huge for them. And look at the talent base that they had there. They had AJ Styles. They had Samoa Joe. They had Christopher Daniels. They had some other guys as well. And it was just like,
I mean, they were the moment when they had a Bound for Glory out in California. They, they brought in Christian, but he wasn't the big push. And then they kind of started, probably, I would say, pre Hogan, when Angle came in. I see what you're saying.
But they never did anything right when it came to like Christian, and especially with Angle, from the standpoint of, you've got these guys that were WWE talents and they were still in their prime, and they never made them feel special outside of like the first maybe couple of weeks they were there, and they just marginalized everybody. And then it was the whole, let's bring in guys that were stars 10, 15 years ago. And then it was Hogan, then it was Bischoff, and it was Russo, and it was just a train wreck.
Yeah.
I don't want to discount too. Let's be real. There was that moment for a couple of weeks in late 2009, early 2010, when Impact, and maybe it was even later in 2010, when Impact did go to Monday nights that first time, it felt different. And I'm not saying we thought they were going to bring down the WWE system like they said they were going to, but there was a lot of hype around Impact at that point that there had not been in the in-between years from 06 to 2009 or 2010.
Yeah, one thing they would do is when they would bring in the established stars, they wouldn't, like you said, they would put the belt on them really quickly.
Yeah.
They, whether it was Mr. Anderson or whether it was RVD or something, they would, as soon as they came in, they were the top guy. And, the story for TNA for Impact for so many years was like, they have the best locker room out there, arguably. Their guys are so talented, they just don't know how to use them. And they don't, these were the moments where they could have used these stars to build up their own roster, and they never did.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I just thought there was some missteps in the way that they spent money, or just not utilizing the talent that they had, or even bringing in some other people that, were only known probably to smarter fans, but it doesn't mean like there were some people that were ready for the next step.
So Fowler, are you saying that Impact Wrestling is your brand of the year? Is that what I'm hearing?
It's my pick for brand of the year. Now that I don't even get pop, I can't watch it, but yeah. And they do go by Impact now, right?
They are strictly Impact. No more TNA.
Strictly Impact. Yeah. Okay. And no Global Force, no, none of that. I would say, and this is me cheating completely, because, and not just to agree with the hosts of this show, but just from what I know of all the momentum New Japan had this past year, from the fact that we're heading into 2018 to Wrestle Kingdom, where probably the most eyes are going to be on this pay-per-view that they've ever had from an American standpoint. The fact that the Jericho Omega match is drawing so much attention, and that is allowing people to actually play the speculation game, is like, what does this mean? Does this mean they're going to have a rematch at WrestleMania? All the stuff we like to do go wild in our heads about. I would say that, not having seen much of it, I would still say New Japan, just from what I know of what they've created this past year, would be the brand of the year. Now, I would say that, for me personally, what I would say would be NXT. From what I've seen, I would not say though that NXT had their banner year. I don't see NXT from year to year. I see them staying consistently great, and I see them having found their spot, but I don't know that they're a brand that's meant to grow. I don't know that they're a brand to be meant be more than what they currently are, because they constantly have to rotate out the stars they build. And I think that we're always just going to be, NXT is always going to be this great promotion that will stay kind of in its, where it's at.
I think that's an interesting,
And there's a,
go ahead.
there's a sadness to that, but also a nice dependability. So there's sort of there's mixed emotions in that, because you want something to be more, but it can rise for about 2 years, and then that sort of seems to be the tipping point for when people get called up, and then they're left to scramble. Now, in that regard, SmackDown, which when the brands initially split during this most recent brand split, was killing it with their, you know, and then they went live, but then after the Superstar shakeup, they scrambled. They lost Bray. They lost Dean. They had to build, you know, they found themselves in sort of an NXT situation, because everything feeds Raw. And that's when you get, and sometimes things really work out. Like, you can really focus in on Breezango and find what about them makes them work. You know, like, all of a sudden the Usos needed challengers, and they rose up, and through that we discovered Fashion Files. And then, but it's also going to lead to something like, oh, we need a top heel right now. So Jinder basically got to skip the mid card completely. You know, he didn't do the mid card journey that we kind of expect from world champions, to get the, you know, either the US title or the Intercontinental title, have some mid level feuds before you get up to that top spot, but they sort of pushed him up. So NXT constantly finds itself in that place where it's always it can rise and rise, and then it has to reset.
Well, I'll say this about NXT too, is that it's going to remain that way unless they do. There's two things to me that they would have to do. Number one is they would have to get a television deal. And the second is they would have to treat NXT a little bit more like they do Raw and SmackDown, in that there has to be some talent that's on those brands that's actually going to go back to NXT. Or I wouldn't even say the word go back necessarily. It's kind of, you know, they just kind of get rotated there. Maybe they get included when they do the Superstar shakeup, something like that. But I don't even think that could even happen until they secure a television deal. And I don't know if that's something they're really pursuing. I'm sure they would like to do it because they always want to make money. And I don't know if that's something that other networks are interested in when it comes to, you know, possibly taking on WWE programming. Is would they be interested in NXT?
Yeah, and then in that regard, we'd be talking about the NBC Universal family, and then they'd have to decide how much wrestling they actually want to put, if they actually want to put more wrestling on USA, or if they wanted to use one of their other channels to feature it. But then it involves, you know, having to find NXT on TV. Yeah, it's an interesting puzzle to try to figure out what to do with it. But these are all huge obstacles, and NXT has still managed to overcome them just based on its booking and its talent. And I think that says a lot for the basics of pro wrestling that often get overlooked.
It's funny you said that. I think your analysis of NXT is spot on, and both of you guys kind of touched on how this brand is always going to kind of be this even flow, really great, but never truly great kind of company until something changes. But you said this, Matt. You said it's not been a banner year for NXT. Now, this has been a bad year, but it's not been their breakout year. I think we look back at 2015 and 2016 is these 2 years where NXT took over in this really powerful way that fans didn't necessarily expect. And yet here in 2017, they had a great year, and they're still number two on our list, even though it wasn't their best year. And they still did better than WWE's main roster shows, Raw and SmackDown. So I find that fascinating. If I were to throw this back out to you, Brian, we have New Japan Pro Wrestling as number one, NXT is number two. To me, there's a gap between those two promotions and everybody else. What would you put as your third place up here?
See, that's the tricky thing, because I'm not exactly sure who I would put there.
Ring of Honor, maybe?
Maybe. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that you could definitely make an argument for. I could see that. I mean, I could see maybe SmackDown, I guess. Quite honestly, because I don't watch enough of it, but to be fair to everybody that's out there, it might be another group like a Rev Pro or something like that in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you look at just how strong European wrestling is. I mean, they've had this renaissance, you know, over the last 2 years, and they continually put on good shows. I mean, they even came to the United States and did a show already. So probably something like that.
WrestleCade? Did you say WrestleCade? Is that what I heard? America's Most Liked Wrestling? Is that what it was?
Nah, I don't think so.
Fowler, who's your third pick?
I mean, I'm a big proponent of, I've always been a big proponent of less is more, and 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown a week always seems to sort of hurt these brands in the long run, because there's more mistakes than successes because there's so much more time. And, you know, Brian and I grew up not seeing wrestlers we love each week. You know, we didn't see the person we're a huge fan of.
Is that what I'm sensing here? Are you throwing me under the bus because I grew up during the Attitude Era, Fowler?
Pipe down, kitty. Okay, let the grown-ups talk now.
You grew up with Russo, who was going to give you your favorites every week because they hit ratings. But if I wanted to see Mr. Perfect, I tuned in randomly hoping there'd be a squash match I could watch. But I might not see him for a month. And that's what NXT's doing. You don't see everyone every week. They get an hour a week. They only have four shows, you know, pay-per-view events, you might call them, a year. And that's what works best. I guess I would say ROH is three. I have caught as much as I can of them, over this past year. I got to see – they came to Dallas a month ago. I saw them live. I saw Cody face Christopher Daniels in a Texas death match. It was awesome. There was a flaming table. Dalton Castle's great. Young Bucks, I think, you know, that promotion continues to thrive and find their way. And even when it involves, you know, their talent going to a place like NXT that we just touted so heavily. But yeah, I would give it to ROH.
It's such a weird thing, though, with Ring of Honor. And I give them credit because, I mean, I definitely put them in the mix there. But so much... And I'm not trying to take away from any of the success of any of the other talent there, but to me, a lot of their success, and they're still trying to figure this out, I think, in the grand plan of things, is with the relationship with New Japan and the amount of talent that they bring over there. When you're talking about Bullet Club and some of the other people that they bring over that are the Japanese stars.
Well, and you take it a step further. A lot of their success this year in American audiences' eyes have been as a result of Bullet Club, Young Bucks, and Cody Rhodes. And my thought has been for this year, Cody Rhodes has developed, we'll talk more about Cody Rhodes here in a minute. Cody Rhodes has developed something really special, but if Cody Rhodes were to leave Ring of Honor next month, what are they going to stake their claim onto to kind of survive 2018 and still have that same buzz about them? They have a great buzz right now, but where do they go next? And that's my bigger concern here.
Yeah, and to be fair about it, when it comes to those guys that you just mentioned, when it comes to Bullet Club, those guys are also under contract to Ring of Honor.
Right.
They're under contract with both places. But, you know, they'll use Kenny Omega in a certain spot to try to, you know, get a crowd, you know, and bring him in for a special event. They'll bring in some Japanese stars, you know, for their bigger events as well. So, you know, there's that as well. And that's something that I think we have to look out for, because I wonder how much longer that relationship is going to continue. And I think that just comes down to the success of New Japan. If they ever grow to a point, especially in the United States, and feel like we need to have our guys stand out on their own with our promotion, and we don't want to do anything with Ring of Honor. And I don't know if it's ever going to get to that point, and maybe they see the benefits in working with one another, but that's something to look out for down the line.
So I think if we were to kind of put a little bell on this one right here, brand of the year, number three, it's a tie, I think, between Ring of Honor and a choose your own independent. I think this is a pretty wide open category. It's funny. Nobody mentioned Lucha Underground this year. And I know that there was some hype about them the last couple of years. And I just feel like that organization is not where they were.
Well, yeah, this year, though, as far as their programming, they only had the second half of season three.
Well, true.
This year, they didn't have a lot on TV, and they took a long gap. You know, it's hasn't been quite beneficial. They haven't gotten the Netflix bump that they hoped, I think, you know, by putting seasons one and two on there. There was that time away that I think hurt season three. And there was the lingering issue also of, would they be coming back for a season four? We've known they just have budgetary issues in that, you know, with what they spend. Being on El Rey, and from all we know, them coming back, they're gonna lose a lot of their filmed segments, and they're just gonna keep it in studio and in the ring. But yeah, I think I love Lucha Underground, but I would have argued for them last year.
Sure. Number two, brand of the year, NXT, without a doubt, just still doing their thing and doing it awesomely. And number one, just a breakout year for New Japan Pro Wrestling here in America. Obviously, New Japan's been a force in wrestling worldwide for years, but it seems like going into 2018, they're the brand with the momentum and the potential to capitalize in a big way. So our next category of the day, biggest news story of the year. And we really kind of want to call this out differently than biggest surprise. So biggest surprise is that we talked yesterday about the most memorable moment or biggest surprise. That's that one moment, that one time that you're like, man, this is a really cool thing. Either something that kind of came up and you didn't expect it, or a match or whatever that just really stuck with you. News is a little bit different because it can be centered around that, but it's also an ongoing story. It's something like, yeah, the Hardy Boys returning was a fun moment, but is that also the most newsworthy thing of the year? I don't know. And so biggest news story captures inside the ring and outside the ring here. And so Fowler, I got to toss it to you. What did you think of when you were looking back at 2017 and the big news stories we had? And it was a pretty noteworthy news year for pro wrestling.
Personally, I would say Bobby Heenan's death. Mm. But that's, I mean, he'd been out of the public eye for a while. And it wasn't, I think I was really happy to see how many sort of love letters to Heenan came out of that, came out of his passing and how appreciated he was, because he was a big part of my childhood. And honestly, for me, the biggest face and personality, overall presence on late 80s WWF then programming. You know, you would see him in every aspect of that show, from ringside to hosting primetime to commentating to backstage promos, all, you know, he was everywhere. But I would give my number one to the Ric Flair health scare, because of, I think because it came during basically between the announcement, the official, because I was at the TCA press tour this past summer, as Michael mentioned at the beginning, the Television Critics Association, and he was at a panel. He was promoting his 30 for 30, which was coming up in the fall. And that's when I interviewed him. It was at the end of July, and it was before his big health scare. And that, you know, he survived, so we can talk about it in a much lighter way. But pairing that with his 30 for 30 and how much of his 30 for 30 involved how he lived, the way he treated his body, the way he would go, the way he constantly sort of, the way he drank, you know, was a huge part. And I think it served as a great messaging to both us and to him, you know. He kicked out of this, but he is now a different person coming out the other side. So that's mine.
It's interesting. I like that you brought in the 30 for 30, because I had Ric Flair almost dying on my list as well. I think if he would have died, and this is not to sound morbid, I think it would have put a little different spin on it. I think the newsworthiness that came out of him almost dying and the changes he's made in his life are valid. But the 30 for 30 piece is intriguing because I heard such a buzz. I didn't expect this, but there's such a buzz for this documentary around people who were casually interested in professional wrestling. And I think it put a different spin on the Ric Flair story for this year. So Ric Flair is on my list. I'm not convinced this is the biggest news story of the year. So the other things I had written down, obviously Bobby Heenan's death was a pretty big one. I know that's a personal one for you, Matt, but I also had on here the Jeff Jarrett struggles, which ties right into the whole Global Force Wrestling debacle that kind of came out of 2017 and kind of what happened with that. It's a latecomer here, but the XFL returning has just been one of those crazy, bizarre, what in the hell is going on kind of scenarios. And the more we hear about it at the end of this year, it's just crazy to me that we are there in 2017 talking about an XFL return. But the one story that I just have to call out here that I think is a greater news story, nothing individual, nothing specific, but it is the wrestler success outside of WWE. And I think it's shown up in so many different areas. So you look at the way Cody Rhodes is the prime example here. He's the poster boy. He left WWE. He's charted his own path. And in 2017, his plan kind of came to fruition. He's had those matches. He's had a lengthy title run in Ring of Honor with their world championship. He's elevated other talent as a result of this, bringing up the Young Bucks with him in a way that they were hot, but now they're super duper hot as part of this greater faction. I just love that. But also, you've seen this pop up in other areas where talent seem more willing to do their own thing. We talked about Neville earlier on in the year and potentially, you know, what would happen if he had actually walked out and tried to go somewhere else. Well, there's potential that he could go find success in other places. And you hear about talent who aren't as afraid. Jack Swagger, for example, who has gone out there to try to chart his own path and do MMA. And it seems like Cody Rhodes kicked this off where he was willing to say, I will put down my guaranteed paycheck month to month from WWE so I can have the creative freedom, the creative expression, and do what I want to do with my career. And I feel like that has empowered and emboldened other talents out there in the pro wrestling world to do that and to take on that mantle. And I think that's amazing. And I think it shows me what has been happening in the independents, the success of the indies, this kind of territory-based independent system rising back up, is great for talent. And I think if I were WWE, I would be looking more to the NXT model to keep talent happy and to keep promoting good shows. So my number one story, wrestler success outside of WWE has been a constant theme throughout this, to the point now where Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks are trying to put together this massive super show in 2018. Brian, where do you land on this?
Well, let me circle back to that point, but I'm going to mention some of the other ones that I have on my list first that I put on here, but I knew would not win, but I didn't want to just gloss over them. Because I agree, Bobby Heenan obviously passing away and the Ric Flair health scare. I did have, you know, the year of debacle that was Impact Wrestling as they went from TNA to Impact to Global Force back to Impact, and now they have new ownership and still are continuing on and making major cuts. They're moving out of Nashville for the most part now, and they're up in Canada. Some of the other things I wanted to mention was Kurt Angle finally making his return to WWE after, you know, almost over a decade, something that he's been wanting to do for years. And not only returning, but already, you know, coming back in the ring and being a weekly part of Raw. That was a big deal. The Undertaker losing at WrestleMania and, you know, I guess best way to say it would be teasing that he's retired because we don't know for a fact. And some people are adamant that he's coming back and others do not believe that's going to happen. Yeah. And see, that's the thing is like, if we knew had a more definitive line on that, then there would be a much bigger story, but because we don't, it just kind of gets forgotten about.
Did either of you watch Parks and Rec?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
I think we both did.
Okay. So that was a bubble show. It was a low rated show. From year to year, we did not know if it was going to return. So every year, their season finale had to also act as a series finale.
Right.
So it would end the story, and it would end a big story, but also kind of give a little seeds for if the show were to come back, you know, cross our fingers, if we get another season, we could keep going. That's what that Undertaker match was for me. It was a soft closing if he wasn't able to return. But they kept it open. They kept it open with their rhetoric by saying, like, when Roman Reigns possibly retired The Undertaker, they always throw in a main. Yeah. Right. They never, and it wasn't advertised as his last match. So that's what that was for me. Sorry, yeah. Brian.
No problem. I would say Mauro Ranallo and the way that he left SmackDown and all the rumors about his departure and then coming back to the company to work with NXT, where he's still at now. I would mention the continued emergence of wrestling over in the UK. I would say the overall quality of in-ring action around the world this year. And just as importantly, the level of talent, because so many people have wondered about, like, if you're not watching WWE, how much are people paying? Some people are paying attention to wrestling. And I remember, you know, 5-10 years ago, people were kind of wondering about, like, what's happening with wrestling. We're seeing indie wrestling dying now, and what is the future of this? And that is not a question anymore, because the amount of talent that's out there is incredible. There's just a ton of people that are very good at this, and independents are doing better than we've seen in a long time. I would mention Chris Jericho having his first match outside of WWE in nearly 20 years, the announcement of that was a huge news story, and seeing that he's actually, while he's still associated with WWE, obviously, but him to finally say, there's a place I want to go work that's not owned by Vince McMahon. I think that is a huge story. Kind of piggybacking off like the brand of the year, I would say New Japan coming into the United States and expanding their growth abroad. And when it comes to the point that you brought up, Michael, about Cody Rhodes and like the success of other talents outside of WWE, that is such a huge deal. And they put down this blueprint. And I would say, though, as good as Cody has done, to me, the first person that really showcased that you can do that is Drew Galloway.
True. Sure.
You look at what Drew did, and I mean, and that guy busted his ass. I mean, just literally working around the world. He helped ignite the emergence over in the UK to where they're at now. And then just what he did here in the United States when it comes to different groups between Impact Wrestling, and he was working for Evolve. And, you know, who knows if he hadn't signed with NXT where he would be right now, because there was a lot of talk about maybe he would be in New Japan or Ring of Honor or both or whatever. But he kind of showed, like, if you work hard enough, if you, you know, really, you know, figure out your brand, you know, you can have success. And Cody has taken that, and he's taken it to another level, I think, because when you add what Cody has done, it's also catapulted him to, when it comes monetarily, for merchandise and what the Bullet Club have done. And for that, I think you've got to include Bullet Club in that, because it shows you can have a good deal of success by not being in WWE, and especially financial success. WWE is always going to be the place where you can make the most amount of money. But if you are a top talent, like, you have to be like basically a top 10 person there. But outside of that, you can still be very successful financially and be well known and damn near a household name outside of that company these days, which is a huge thing. It's not everybody can pull it off. Like you mentioned Jack Swagger, and I think that was going to be tougher for Jack. And there's going to be some other people that are probably going to try to leave WWE and see what they do. And I hope it works out for them. But quite honestly, it's not going to work for everybody, but there definitely are going to be some people it works for.
I gotta, you know, I think all the factors we're talking about, to me, all the different things we talked about, New Japan's growth, the talent that have found success, to me, the number one category here, hands down, if I captured this in one area, it would be the growth success of wrestling outside of WWE. And that includes the talent. That includes the organizations growing. That includes factors like Chris Jericho going to wrestle for an alternate organization. Maybe that needs to be separate. I don't know. But to me, number one here, clear and above, beyond all else, is the growth and success of professional wrestling not associated with WWE.
Michael, would you say that NXT attracts people to the company, to WWE, the way 205 Live makes people quit?
I mean, 205 Live's getting ready to be a hot show. We're going to have Finn Balor over there feuding with Hideo Itami.
Stop it. That's his running joke, Matt. God.
God. I mean, I love running jokes that I just come in on. That's like, right. I love them.
Oh, my God.
So
trust me, the greatest moment for Michael and validation of that joke, which he's been doing for the last month, was this past Monday or last Monday on Raw, when Hideo Itami had to come and save Finn Balor. The newest member, the newest star of 205 Live, had to come and save Finn Balor as he was being beaten down by the Miztourage.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
Finn Balor has like two creative levels in WWE, like main event or just, you know,
205 Live.
Yeah, or just like sweeping up the utility closet. Oh, yeah. Like, honestly, like, they don't know what to do with them in the interim. Like, they had, like, I already mentioned the shambles they turned the demon into. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you. Where would you guys stand on this year, news-wise, Cena stepping back?
Oh, I think that's a good call out. That's an interesting one.
Like, just Cena, like actively taking more time off and then bringing it into his story and then having that match with Roman, which I wasn't a huge fan of the match, but him being saying like, you know what, I need to be able to make sure I'm going to be able to walk in 20 years. I'm going to explore other opportunities outside of WWE. You know, he's not doing it the way that the wrestlers are with other promotions, but he's trying to go the entertainment route and he's kind of stepping down.
So here's what I would say. If I look at this list, and I think you bringing up John Cena is a great point. I want to put the XFL on here just because it's such a surprise. But I think because we're so close to 2018 and the fact that it could be announced and we don't know exactly what's going to happen with that, I got to shelf that. As much as it's been an exciting thing to talk about, XFL returning, I'm going to shelf that off the list. Now, I do think All due respect to Bobby Heenan's death, I think to me that's a notch below the health scare and the Ric Flair story of the year. So if I look at this list, I say wrestler success outside of WWE is number one. The ongoing Ric Flair story throughout the year and the different you know, cul-de-sacs it's taken as it's moved on, I think that's number two. And I think John Cena taking a step back to possibly move on to Hollywood would be my number three.
I would agree with that number, yeah.
All right. Biggest news story of the year. Number three, John Cena taking some time away from the ring to potentially pursue a career in Hollywood. Number two, the Ric Flair story from almost dying to a phenomenal 30 for 30 to even, I think, the success, the moments he's had with his daughter this year. And number one, just the incredible success of wrestling outside of WWE, from the talent, from the promotions, from the growth, from the matches and everything else. Just a huge, and the ramifications it has on the impact of American professional wrestling are just immense. All right, contentious category here, wrestler of the year. And I know we all want to immediately award this to The Miz. I get that. But I have to call out a couple of names on my list that I think
you wouldn't exactly get a huge argument.
Well, let's be serious for a second. I love The Miz. I think he's a great talent. I the thing that keeps me from wanting to give this, I know he won this for, I think it was Rolling Stone announced theirs a few weeks ago, and Miz was their wrestler of the year. The only reason I can't give it to The Miz, the main reason I can't is because I think he deserves, if this was the promo of the year, I think, or mic talker, trash talker, promo guy, whatever you want to call it, The Miz could win this category. I don't think he's been given the matches or the promotion on pay-per-views to make him the wrestler of the year. And so I feel like he's lost that spot to that. Now, I do think two guys deserve call-outs here. Cody Rhodes, because of the buzz around him, the matches he's had on the indies, the success he's found, I think he deserves a shout-out here. But to me, this category goes to Kenny Omega, for the way he's elevated himself, the way he's elevated his game, the matches he's had on the independents, and now the buzz he's created with a feud with Chris Jericho. I don't know. That was the guy that just said, yep, he's it. He's my wrestler of the year. Now, WWE-wise, AJ Styles has had another stellar year, but I think it's much like the NXT conversation we had earlier. This was a banner year, but not his banner year. 2016 was the year AJ Styles came into his own in WWE. 2017, some great matches. You talk about the Finn match. You talk about what he did at Royal Rumble with John Cena. But in between, there's been some lulls for his career. So people love the Brock Lesnar match. But he's not had a from stem to stern great year. So
the Shane match at Mania. But yeah, after Mania through the summer, it wasn't like his time to shine, but then they came back around on him. So,
right. So Matt, what do you, I'm leaning towards Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes. I'd put AJ Styles on there. I like The Miz. I don't know where I fall on this, Matt. Where do you think you fall?
I mean, I would give it to, and again, this is cheating here because I've only seen two New Japan matches this year, but both were Kenny Omega match. So I would give it to Kenny Omega. If I was just basing it on everything I've seen from him this past year, was amazing.
Sure.
Because I saw two amazing matches with Okada. I feel in my heart of hearts I would give it to AJ Styles, just because anytime there's a WWE pay-per-view, and again, we mentioned earlier about how only one WWE pay-per-view cracked the best pay-per-views of the year, category. But anytime there is one, it's the AJ Styles match I'm usually looking the most forward to, or the one that I know will be a good match.
Right.
Reliably, whether it's with Kevin Owens or even, and I would say this too, we could, Jinder Mahal's an entirely different topic. And the fact that I understood what they were doing with him, but I was never, ever excited about a Jinder Mahal match. But I knew when he would face AJ Styles, I would get a good match. And the fact that he started the year as champ, he's leaving the year as champ, I would give it to AJ.
Brian, who did you have on the list that I forgot to mention?
You both forgot to mention the person that I have at number one. And that is because we talk about those matches between Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada. And as great as Kenny Omega has been, to me, the wrestler of the year is Okada. You look at what he has done. this year. I mean, even go back to the way that he was misused in Impact Wrestling and what a joke that was, and what he has done since he has come back to New Japan Pro Wrestling, where now he is the current heavyweight champion. He is a four-time heavyweight champion. He is the longest running IWGP heavyweight champion in the history of New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is now more than 550 days. And on top of that, when you count up all of his title runs, he's held that championship longer than anybody in that promotion's history. And every time that he goes out there, he has an incredible match with anybody and everybody. And I believe we can say that as well with Kenny Omega. And you look at the number of talents that are over in New Japan, it's incredible how stockpiled they are when it comes to fantastic in-ring performers. As great as Kenny Omega has been, and he's the one that people talk about a lot just because Kenny is just so exciting, plus he speaks English, and it makes it easier for us, you know, here. And just he's a little bit more of a, obviously, more of a flamboyant character. To me, my wrestler of the year has to go to Kazuchika Okada.
This Kazuchika Okada. Okay, so let me take a step back here. I think Fowler brought up some great points about AJ Styles, and he honestly, Styles probably gets the short end of the stick here because we are so overexposed to him. We mentioned Kenny Omega, Kazuchika Okada. We don't see those guys as much, so when we see them, it's in a very highlighted, spotlighted fashion. So I think AJ Styles has grown up my list from the points Matt made. But my question to you, Brian, is does Kazuchika Okada do anything that Kenny Omega did not do this year? Plus, Kenny Omega's created buzz in America outside of New Japan.
I think he does from the standpoint of the prestige he brings the championship. And it's not that Omega wouldn't, but when you look at what the foundation of New Japan Pro Wrestling is, and you see where he has come from to where he is now, and he is a guy, when you look at him, you believe that's a world champion. I mean, the prestige that he has bought that championship. And like I said, I don't think necessarily that Omega would take it down, but just a little bit different. You have this outstanding Japanese wrestler in a Japanese promotion that has some Americans in it. And like I said, every time Okada goes out there and he has a match, I mean, just what he does, and it's like this old school wrestling style mixed in with a new breed as well. You know, the selling that goes into matches, the precision of when to do a move at the right time. It's incredible what he does there. To me, and it's nothing against the other guys. Like I had AJ third on my list because I had Omega second. In fact, I had Roman Reigns in my top five.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I had Reigns too, and I'll just give a shout out to Braun Strowman and Asuka as well. They were in my top, but yeah, Roman. I don't like Roman. You know, I'm not shy about that. Like, I boo loudly. I don't know why kids like him, other than the fact that he looks like a space pirate. He doesn't do anything heroic.
No. Have I told you my theory on this, Fowler? Since you're a movie critic as well, you'll appreciate it. You're a TV critic, but I know you watch movies as well. I figured out where they came up with Roman Reigns from. Have I told you this?
The Pirates of Darkwater?
Well, maybe that too. But I'm fairly certain that Vince McMahon was watching the Fast and the Furious 5, I think it was the first one with The Rock in it, right? And I think what happened, if you watch that movie, The Rock's character in that movie, number one, wears the vest just like Roman Reigns. It has the exact same look because he's an agent of the FBI or whatever, the badass FBI. Number two, in that movie, swear to God, The Rock spears Vin Diesel through glass and throws a Superman punch. No lie.
I mean, that's possible. Because the Shield all wore the flak jackets, right? You know, or that whole look. No, it's possible.
Because the time frame of that lines up with the debut of the Shield shortly thereafter.
It does, but there's one glaring thing that's missing in that argument, Michael. And you're saying that Vince McMahon saw a movie over the last 20 years. And I don't know if he has. Someone told him about it. Yeah.
Let's just be honest here. Vince McMahon sees every movie with The Rock in it because that is his greatest success in his mind. Not WWE, not WrestleMania. The fact that a professional wrestler broke through to be the biggest Hollywood star of our time, if not almost of all time, that keeps Vince McMahon satisfied with his hordes and hordes of money. But that is Vince McMahon's crowning achievement in his life.
Vince McMahon wrote a movie in a weekend. So he is a cinephile through and through. And that movie not involved someone diarrheaing their own pants, but it involved a dive bar with a trough in the bathroom filled with urine. So I won't have you besmirching Vince McMahon's movie-going savvy.
Did he really write the what is the name of that movie with Hulk Hogan?
No Holds Barred.
No Holds Barred. Yeah, did he really write No Holds Barred?
That's the story, is that he and Hogan locked themselves in a hotel room one weekend and wrote that movie. I'm sure they just came up with the story beats of some sort.
Oh,
you know?
My God. Well, you mentioned Roman Reigns here, and I think Roman Reigns, to me, you guys are right. I think his in-ring work gets underrated, and I think the way he's being pushed by McMahon keeps him down on people's list as a result. But I also think Roman Reigns has botched some of the things, the way he's delivered the characters, whether it was by direction or not. Talk about that feud with John Cena. He just really messed that up out the get-go. And the match that he had with Cena, the way it ended, I think left a sour taste in my mouth. But maybe he needs to be on this list. I don't know. What were you going to say, Fowler?
I was just going to spew more Roman Reigns hate, but that's fine.
So here's where I kind of see this list. I think, Brian, you bring up great points about Kazuchika Okada. And I think Okada's ongoing IWGP Heavyweight Championship reign is a testament to his talent in a way that I've kind of undercut. That he is the longest reigning in the history of the IWGP Heavyweight Champions. That's pretty incredible. So maybe he does get the nod here. Now, do we give Kenny Omega number two? Do we give AJ Styles number two? I don't know.
I would give Kenny two and AJ three.
Explain more. Why?
Well, I mean, when you look at, you know, WWE has to be considered in this because it is the biggest wrestling promotion in the world. And I think when you look at who is the best in-ring talent right now and a guy that continues to have high level matches, like Matt said, when you go into a pay-per-view that's got WWE slapped on it and AJ Styles is there, you're like, that's going to be the best match. You immediately think that. I think anytime that you turn on, SmackDown and you expect AJ to do something out there, that's going to be great. And plus, on top of that, you look at what AJ has done outside of the ring. I mean, he continues to get better and better on promos, which some people thought would never happen. And he's able to carry segments out there like that. I have to look at WWE, and AJ's the top guy in WWE in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, just think about how there were two pay-per-views in a row where AJ Styles basically subbed in for someone, and everyone instantly became excited about the match they weren't excited about before. And that was Bray Wyatt. He subbed for him at TLC, and then basically he took the title off Jinder Mahal and made it the match with Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series, you know, one of the must-see matches of that show.
I think, to me, number one, I do want to bring this up. This category does include women's wrestlers as well, and I know one of you guys mentioned Asuka. Asuka definitely deserves props for the work she's done. I don't want to discount what the women have done this year. I think the problem is the way WWE books its women, it doesn't allow any of them to shine in a way where they could earn this category quite as easily. These multi-women matches don't play to their strengths. And I think outside of Asuka, we've not seen anybody. Alexa Bliss has had some good matches, but we've not seen anybody take the reins in the same way we have in years past in the women's division. And even Asuka down the stretch with her injury and then kind of being brought up to the main roster the way she has lost some of that steam. I think she deserves honorable mention here, and if it were, you know, if we were doing a runner-up or best women's category, she would definitely win that in my mind. But it sounds like we're all kind of doubling down here. Now, I think after the conversation we've had, I would probably rank AJ Styles on par with Kenny Omega for the impact he's had, but also Omega has had such a great year. I get why Brian makes the argument he's number two. So here's kind of the list. Let's see if we all agree on this. Runner-up, honorable mention, best woman of the year, Asuka. Number three, AJ Styles. Number two, Kenny Omega. Number one, Kazuchika Okada.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not running an invasion angle on your show, so I agree.
Okay, so Wrestler of the Year, Kazuchika Okada. And here we get to the last category of our Best of 2017. And probably, I know if your listener is anywhere as long as mine, we're going to try to get this out of here before Monday morning, Christmas morning. But Match of the Year. And there have been so many, we've talked about this a lot over the last 2 days. There have been so many great matches in 2017 that I started making this list. And I started rewatching matches, rewatching events. And I really could not stop watching wrestling over the last couple of days and adding to this list. So Brian, I just want to hear what made your cut, what made your list for Match of the Year.
Well, I'll be perfectly honest. When you look at like high quality matches, there's going to be some stuff that not everybody is going to know about because it was New Japan. And I'll be perfectly honest too. There's going to be some other people that are super duper hardcore people. They're like, well, you didn't mention this match from Evolve or Rev Pro or PWG. And that's because it's limited in how you can access those. And I'm not watching that as much as even some people are watching New Japan. And even when it comes to New Japan, I'm not watching all of it, but I'm watching more than I have. There's a litany of matches over there, especially when it comes to stuff that they did in the G1. You know, Naito and Omega over the G1. That was the finals. They did Naito and Tanahashi was in the tournament. And there was some other matches throughout the year, like Okada and Shibata had a great match at Genesis, or Power Struggle, Takahashi and Ibushi. So those are ones that, unless you're really into New Japan, maybe you're not going to know as much about. When it comes to WWE, AJ Styles and John Cena at the Royal Rumble really stands out to me. Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne, NXT TakeOver in Chicago, obviously, was just this incredible match that I think really, you know, grabbed everybody that we thought maybe was going to be a good match, but we had no idea it was going to be that level. And then the amount that the crowd got into that and just how sharp that match was awesome. But I think when you look at Match of the Year, you have to look at that series that Okada and Omega had. I think any one of those, you know, I could see somebody voting for that. I think most people that would not vote for the third one, even though it was incredible. It was the shortest one of the three, because I was the one with the 30-minute time limit and the only one that Omega won. The one that I would go with is their second match that they had, and that was at Dominion, and that was the 60-minute draw.
Fowler, I'm going to toss it to you to flesh out some of the WWE lists we have here, because I know that we have a lot of things Brian mentioned from New Japan, but you're in the WWE as much as anybody. What else did you have on your list that we haven't mentioned yet?
I mean, the Fatal 4-Way at SummerSlam for the Universal title. I really dug AJ Styles and Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. I think that, like Brian said, Cena and Styles at the Rumble, and the Tyler Bate Pete Dunne series, I guess, because they did kind of have three notable matches this year. Like Chicago, I think, is the best.
Yeah,
but I really like their NXT bout from last week as well. And then with that regard, Asuka Ember Moon at NXT, Brooklyn 3, the War Games match, which I really enjoyed, despite not really rooting, like I didn't really, wasn't really rooting for any team in particular. So it was just became more of a spectacle. But I really enjoyed War Games. And the Cesaro Roman Reigns match on Raw.
Like, sure. Yeah.
Just after Raw, like that was really awesome. And again, like, you know, like I said, like I am not a Roman Reigns fan, but he can go. And when there's someone else in there like Cesaro, like they're going to put on something really special. Usos, New Day, Hell in a Cell. Sorry. Usos, New Day, Hell in a Cell, and New Day Shield at Survivor Series. I really enjoyed both of those.
And, yeah, I mean, the SummerSlam match that New Day and Usos had, which is the kickoff show.
Which, what are you talking about, the Survivor Series match?
The SummerSlam. Oh, yeah. It was the kickoff show for SummerSlam, New Day and Usos.
Yeah, and also the... the Extreme Rules match, the five-way.
Oh,
for the number one
contendership. Yep. The main event, Extreme Rules. So it's funny, WWE was just rich in great matches this year, and I think tag team wrestling has taken a step up. You mentioned New Day Shield, the Usos versus New Day. We have not mentioned the Shield versus Sheamus and Cesaro from No Mercy, that brutal match where Sheamus got his teeth knocked in. That was a fun one, and it's just a great match. Other great tag team matches: Authors of Pain versus DIY versus The Revival from TakeOver Orlando. I think that one's got lost in the shuffle because it was so much earlier in the year, but that match was hot that night, and just fun in a way that only tag team wrestling can be. I didn't hear one of you guys mention the SummerSlam main event, Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns versus Samoa Joe versus Braun Strowman. I don't think it wins this category by a long shot, but the brutality in that match, to be a disappointment from expectations in my mind, what it delivered was a fun, brutal brawl that was totally unique this year from anything else in WWE. Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Chris Jericho on SmackDown in July for the United States Championship. A surprisingly fun match that again, on SmackDown gets overlooked. And everybody talks about Cena versus Styles from the Rumble, but Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns had a great match on that card as well. And we talk about Roman Reigns being a workhorse. He's given us some great matches this year, without a doubt. And of course, AJ Styles versus Finn Balor, TLC, a great match, just technical match, an exciting match, a first ever match, which was special. And giving a little love to NXT here, Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream deserves some props for just something unexpected and seeing two talent come into their own and tell a great story. Now, if you know me, you know that I always break down matches of the years also based on their status, based on their platform. And so I knock out a lot of our list, even though they were great matches, great tag team matches, because a great match can be technically great, can be exciting, but I think it also needs to have that element of large stakes. You know, there's got to be something here that says this is going to have a major impact on the organization, on the championship, on the contenders involved. So unfortunately, you know, Tyler Bates versus Pete Dunne, TakeOver Chicago, fantastic match, but really a mid-card match on a mid-card show. No offense to NXT, but they're not the main brand here. So they lose some stature there. So I look at this list and I say, okay, if I want to give props where props are due and really make this category match of the year, and maybe we could do five here, I don't know, but my top three in order from third to first, number three, Cena versus Styles at the Rumble. I think it was an amazing match and a great capstone to that feud. And I love what they did here. However, War Games at NXT TakeOver was just so special, so exciting, so different that it made number two in my list. And I kind of agree with Brian. Number one, Okada versus Omega for match of the year. That's my top three. Brian Fowler.
From Dominion.
Number two, yeah, from Dominion. Their second one where they went to the time limit draw. All three of those matches were great, but Brian has convinced me over the year that Okada-Omega 2 match probably tops number one, and I think I agree. The fact that it went to a time limit draw, that a major wrestling organization was willing to take it there, tells a great story. That's my top three in order. Brian, what do you push back on for me from that?
I really don't push back on anything. I think it just comes down to what we watch this year. And I think there's a lot of people that are like Matt in that people went out of their way to watch those New Japan matches when it comes to Okada and Omega, because there was so much buzz about them. And like I said before, like I watch more New Japan now, but I'm far from like an expert or historian or anything like that. You know, I still don't watch every event that they do. There's a part of me, and I think there's going to be some other people that do, when they watch, if they watch a lot of WWE, they watch NXT, they watch Ring of Honor, they watch New Japan, that if we really wanted to rank the top three matches, I think the three Omega Okada matches would be there. Like the third one from G1 would be number three, the first one from Wrestle Kingdom would be number two, and then the one from Dominion would be number one.
But Cena versus Styles, I think Cena versus Styles is as good as what we saw. It's different. It's WWE style. Don't get me wrong, but I think it's as good as some of those efforts.
And I would say this too. Like that's, if I was being, you know, a true sense, pure, I would put those three matches at the top. But at the same time, I think that in some way discounts some of the other great stuff that's out there. So if I said, okay, I can only pick one of those. Okay. I would take the Dominion one. And then the other ones that really stand out to me would be Styles and Cena from the Rumble and Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne from Chicago.
Okay, Fowler, what do we need to, WWE wise, what do we need to make sure we leave on this list? I think it's, without a doubt, Okada Omega stays at the top, but
I mean, I think really the Cena, I think as far as like WWE representation, the Cena Styles match, really, because it's the best match Cena had all year. Like I kind of feel like after that match is when he notably sort of took a shift down in the ring. Like I feel like he really gave it his all there, and then that's when he sort of was like, I need to prep for my future, or explore other avenues, take it down a notch in the ring. But he really showed up for that match. So I think as far as WWE goes, yes, I would like to see the Dunn-Bate Chicago match on the list for NXT, but I would also take, if we're looking for an NXT slot, I would also accept War Games. Yeah.
So let me just do this like we did for our big category yesterday, match of the year. Let's branch it out to five. I know we typically do three here on this best of category, but let's do five top matches. And I'm going to throw something at you guys. We've talked some about it. Maybe you don't agree with me on this, but I would say number five. And I just feel like I want to give some representation to the year in wrestling as a whole. And I think Asuka versus Ember Moon at Brooklyn Takeover 3, I think that deserves some props, because women's wrestling was not as good this year as it was in 2016 from WWE. But I think that Asuka Ember Moon match is as good as most wrestling matches we've seen from the women in NXT or WWE. And I kind of want to slot that in here as number five. Thoughts?
No, I'm totally for that. It's hard to stand out on the main roster from the women's division standpoint as to sort of like, unless you're given like a serious multi-month feud like Sasha Banks and Charlotte had the previous year, you're just kind of all going to blend together. And even Alexa Bliss, as we exit the year as champ, is just lost in the shuffle. So yeah, someone like Asuka down in NXT, where you can actually tell a really streamlined, great story, and then provide a rematch like that, because I wasn't even a big fan of their first match. But their Takeover Brooklyn 3 match was amazing. And I was also very happy that prior to the event, I bought a Asuka and still undefeated shirt, and it wasn't proven wrong by the end of the night.
You can still wear that. It's still true in greater WWE.
Until Ronda Rousey beats her at WrestleMania, of course. Wait, what?
Oh my God. That fans will riot. Fans will riot. Oh.
Yeah, and I have no problem with you putting that number five. I mean, because, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, I can look at things from a certain standpoint, but, you know, I like to have representation from some other places as well. And that was one of the outstanding, you know, NXT matches and female matches of the year.
So list as it stands, unless somebody has a last minute contention, number five, Asuka versus Ember Moon from Takeover Brooklyn 3. Number four, conversation has pushed us down the list, War Games from NXT Takeover. I think surprisingly great, surprisingly fun, surprisingly brutal. Number three, Tyler Bates versus Pete Dunne from Takeover Chicago. And again, these two have had a series of great matches, a great feud. This was probably the capstone. But I love the fact that UK talent has been spotlighted this year in a really impressive way for American audiences. Number two, best WWE matchup of the year, hands down, Cena versus AJ Styles, the capstone to their great feud for the WWE Championship, obviously. And again, we're seeing two men in their prime at the top of their game. And the chance of Cena can't wrestle need to be long gone, because Cena proved he can go with the best in the world in this match, and I love the hell out of it. But number one, just Okada and Omega. These guys have had such a fantastic feud. The time limit draw was a great match. And but you could pick out the time limit draw from New Japan Pro Wrestling Dominion was a great match. You could pick out any of their three to slot in here, I think. But this rematch was so much fun, and it deserves the match of the year without a doubt. And I look at this list, and what really stands out to me is outside of War Games, NXT Takeover, everything else on our list was a long-term feud. Okada versus Omega was a feud that took place over the course of a year. Cena versus Styles took place close to at least 6 months, but closer to a year. Tyler Bates versus Pete Dunne all throughout 2017. And Asuka versus Ember Moon was a multi-month feud as well. And we talk about now in pro wrestling how things happen so fast, or as Hulk Hogan always says, they'll start a feud at the beginning of the night and they'll be friends by the end of the night. I love that organizations have found ways to carry out these feuds over the course of many, many months and give us these high impact matches on big shows. I think that's fantastic. So there you go. Match of the year. Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada from New Japan Pro Wrestling Dominion. And just like capping off a great year of in-ring action for New Japan, for WWE, for Ring of Honor, for everybody else out there. Fowler, hit me with any other last thoughts, takeaways from 2017 that you want to share.
Why is the XFL coming back?
that's your line to go out on for 20. Well, it's 2017, Fowler. What else would you expect from a year as bizarre and crazy as this one?
That's right. Why not return to 2001?
Yep.
I'm getting a tribal tat.
Oh, nice.
Just to celebrate the return of the XFL.
Well, I'm going to do the Las Vegas with Las Vegas Outlaws, right? Was that the one? That's
yes, that's right.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm going with it.
In honor of this, I am going to break out, which is in my closet right now, my XFL Orlando Rage jersey, which does not have a player name on it. It just says Orlando on the back, which, in fact, I do have that. I haven't worn a long time, but I know exactly where it's at. So I will have to, you know, if they do, in fact, bring back the XFL and it's called the XFL, I will gladly sport that shirt and post a picture of myself wearing it with feigning excitement.
Do you reckon I can still get a He Hate Me jersey? Because He Hate Me went on to play some ball for the Carolina Panthers, if you know that. So do you reckon they still make those anywhere?
Maybe check eBay, but I don't know if will the NFL make that, because there's some stuff they will make and there's some stuff that they kind of flag and they're like, we won't do that.
Interesting. They probably don't. They probably don't make that anymore, at least.
Well, you can customize jerseys. It's just sometimes you can't. They won't let you do it. They're like, no, we're not going to accept that.
Well, you just customize it yourself. You just get some white out and you paint it on the back and you're good. That's all you got to do.
I think the ones that come from the NFL, probably a little bit higher of a quality.
They make like iron-on patches at Michael's. I could probably get all the letters of the alphabet. So
there's some stitching that's involved if you want a real jersey. I don't know.
Duct tape.
Once you learn how to sew, okay, maybe that would help.
I'll do that. That's my New Year's resolution for 2018. Learn how to sew so I can make myself a He Hate Me jersey. Speaking of 2018, Brian and I will be back tomorrow, so keep it plugged in here. We're going to be doing our questions extravaganza. You still have time to get in questions for that. You can send them to us, btrmailbag@gmail.com. Post them on Facebook. Post them on Twitter using #AskBTR. We'll be back with that tomorrow. But listen, I just want to, first off, thank you both for being here. Brian, you know, you and I talk every week, so I don't know you that many thanks, but Fowler, really appreciate your time today, dude. I really do.
I thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it as well, and I hope you guys have a great rest of the year, and thanks for having me as your guest.
Yeah, anytime. You are welcome in this show. You're such a great guy. Anytime. You can follow Matt Fowler at the Matt Fowler on Twitter. Again, he writes wrestling for IGN. He is a member of the Television Critics Association, so he really digs into some of those geeky shows we all love, and just an all-around great guy. Listen, guys, if you like what we do, please do subscribe to our podcast. If you want to throw us a few bucks, we do have a Patreon up. Go to patreon.com/betweentheropes, and we are happy to get $1 a month from you if that's all you get. We're going to be doing some more Patreon-exclusive stuff in the future. But most importantly, if you're listening to this, we just want to say thank you for listening to us and being with us here in 2017. It's been an amazing year in pro wrestling. I think Brian and I have had some fun times together covering wrestling for you guys. And just stay in touch in the new year. We're looking forward to doing more great content right here at Between the Ropes 2018. Keep it tuned in here. We'll talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.